I'm going to leave the lion's share of this morning's time to two very much more capable people than I to share some words of witness and testimony. Two of the men that helped run our Not a Shelter, you'll be hearing more about that Not a Shelter that we opened for about 4 days, repeatedly saying we are not a shelter while we sheltered a lot of people. But I want to just give you a quick update of where we were and where we are in this year. And so last year on this Sunday, on the 27th, we canceled church services as the rain was really falling. And what we did is we took the supply of our family promise, mattresses and all of our linen, and we took it over to the Atascocita Volunteer Fire Department right over here by us, because already there were beginning to be teams assembled from around the state, around the country, of other fire departments that were going to be coming and staying and working out of that fire department to help with water rescues. The following day, we received a request from the Atascocita Fire Department to operate as a dry space. As a dry space, they just to drop off the water rescues, not as a shelter. That was never our intent. It was overwhelming to think of, but we said yes to being a dry space, and so we stayed open 4 days as Not a Shelter. We knew that our weekday learning center, as soon as the streets were cleared, was going to be starting, and that we would need to have our facility open and available. But we said yes, and then God used the rest. From this place, we had over 150 people that came through here to stay at our Not a Shelter, and we had many more that received supplies and food and clothing and flood buckets. Lots of supplies went out through here. The volunteer response, oh my goodness. So we put out the word, first of all, through Facebook and through text. Then we got Ray involved, and he put out emails to the congregation letting them know about work teams. And so many of you responded and were able to go out there to our own member families and to your neighbors and do that immediate and hard work of pulling out sheetrock and pulling up floors, of stacking things out by the curb, things that had to be done as immediately as possible as the floodwaters started to go away. There are volunteers from our church and from our whole community because they knew somebody who was here, and they came here and they assembled at our Not a Shelter and served food and made sandwiches for all the work teams that went out, brought supplies, and visiting with the guests that came through here. And that was so critical. You can imagine, you may have been one of them just in this state of being shell-shocked, and here you are at this place and somebody friendly sits down beside you just to let you talk. That was so invaluable. We then, as our folks began to be spread out and staying with other people, we mobilized the casserole team, right? And we are Methodist. We know how to cook. And we know how to bring food. And at least 100 casseroles were given during those first couple of 3 weeks just to assist with those immediate kind of needs. We gave away a devotional Year of Tenacity to our families at Christmas, and then there's been untold hours of prayer. And so I want to stop for just a moment and first of all ask if we have any first responders here this morning. If you are a first responder, if you would please stand. Okay, if you are one of the folks who came and worked and are not a shelter, you came and sorted clothes, cooked food, helped with the work teams. If you are any of those, would you stand? And I'm going to ask each group to stay standing. So if you'll stand where you are. If you are one of those who brought food or linens or supplies of any sort to our shelter, water, all those things, if you brought supplies to our shelter, would you please stand where you are? If you served on any of the work teams that went out into the community, or if you served on your own work team because you were helping your neighbors, if you provided physical support during this time, if you would please stand where you are. If you were one of those who gave money so that other people could go out and do these things and you donated during this time, if you would please stand where you are. And if you are one of those who during that immediate time and then in the year since then have prayed for those who have been affected by Harvey, would you please stand where you are if you've offered prayer support? Friends, I want you to look around. This is the body of Christ in action. Yes, it is. Give yourselves a hand. And you may be seated. And so a year later, I also want to tell you, we brought in 28,800 something in donations. Over 24,000 of that was in direct donations. And then we sold these t-shirts last year to raise additional money in order to help folks. And we had churches and families, you got to know this, from Pennsylvania, New York, Colorado, Georgia, Virginia, California, Arkansas, and Alabama that sent donations to this church specifically. And they did it because they knew somebody who goes here. And they trusted us with their funds, and they asked only that we use those locally right here in our community. And we did. So we've distributed almost all of that money. We have about $900 left, $13,600 in direct aid to members and Weekday Learning Center staff, $1,000 to our friends across the lake at Lake Houston United Methodist Church in those early days. You may know that they flooded and that they had no flood insurance. And so we gave them some of their first money right after that. About $4,100 for flood buckets that were so needed in our community. Another $1,500 was designated for a United Methodist Committee on Relief, and we passed that on to UMCOR. And the other $7,627 went to help those in our community through direct aid and supplies and gift cards. Many of those were nominated by you because you knew somebody, or the school systems, our partner schools, gave us names of folks, and so we were able to help them as well. Another part of the story for us in this last year has been the outside groups that have come here. And one of the largest was, the ongoing, was St. Philip's Catholic Church over in Huffman. They also suffered catastrophic flooding. As a matter of fact, just a couple of weeks ago, on August the 12th of this year, they celebrated their first Mass back in their own church. So for a year, they've been displaced. They were able to offer Mass over at the Overlook, just on the other side of 1960, and they asked us, do y'all have any space at all that we could at least do some of our Christian education classes? And so we looked around, and we thought about it, and we said, you know what, we do. And so every Sunday morning during our Sunday school time, for this entire academic year, they have had their entire children's program in our Weekday Learning Center classes over in the Life Center and meeting, and they didn't have to skip those. And every single Wednesday night during this entire academic year, their entire youth group was upstairs in our education building so that they were able to not have to miss a full year of their Christian education. I've received so many thank you notes from the folks over at St. Philip's, and got one from their priest, and just said they would have never been able to offer Christian education if not for this church saying yes, you can do that here. We also had a couple of orchestra groups that normally practiced at Lone Star College. You know, that was devastated, and they came over here and held some rehearsals here. We several times had Humble ISD, a special ed department, and some of the other departments, but again, some of their buildings were devastated, and so they have held some of their trainings over here as well. And then there's this eighth grade boys basketball group that was used to practicing over at Kingwood High School, which, of course, was flooded. Their coaches' homes were flooded, and they weren't sure that they would be able to have a season of basketball until our church opened up to them on Friday nights. They had a season. I got a beautiful thank you note from this group of boys saying to thank you to this church for allowing them to be able to practice here, and they had gone on to have a very successful season. So now what? Well, some of you have already brought some supplies for flood buckets or gave a little bit of money last week, and we've assembled a couple of flood buckets. You can always make flood buckets. The ingredients for those are over in the Asbury Commons. We have an UMCOR depot now just over in Conroe, so much closer than Louisiana, which is where we normally had to take it. And so you can make flood buckets anytime for the next storm, and we'll put those where they need to be. Our annual conference has opened up three long-term offices in different parts of our conference that were affected for ongoing, where they're talking 3 to 6 years of presence with folks as they try to rebuild their lives. And so you can go to the conference webpage and Texas Recovers. You can set up a team and go work in people's homes. And certainly you can always donate through the conference as well. And then what you can do every single day is to continue to support our families and those families that you know in getting back to their new normal through your prayers and presence and calls. And friends, you have been the body of Christ. You continue to be the body of Christ. And I want you to hear from a couple of these guys that on your behalf did so much. And so, Kenny, I'm going to ask you to come up first.
Good morning, church.
Morning,
choir. Herb. Have you ever interceded for someone in need through prayer or action or just being by them during their time of crisis or chaos in their life? Has anybody ever interceded for you? I want you to think about that for a moment. See, throughout the New Testament, there are countless stories of Jesus modeling intercession as the go-between or connector to God. The term stand in the gap, in many ways, is another word for the immediate action we take to intercede for those in need. See, being that light that cuts through the fog of a crisis to help someone see past their present troubles, even if it's just a glimpse. It's that action, no matter how big or how small, that's that connection between despair and hope. See, it was just a year ago that our community was devastated by Hurricane Harvey. In the midst of the chaos of the storm, our lives were turned upside down, inside out. Fear, disbelief, shock, grief, anger were just a few of the emotions churning in and around us, just like the rising waters. Countless stories of heroic rescues, heroic bravery from first responders, neighbors helping neighbors right here on our very own community. Many sought shelter, refuge, and sanctuary because they had fled their homes. No one single person or entity could fill the enormous void created by that terrible storm. But here's the good news. See, God had plans for this church. See, Atascocita United Methodist responded by becoming a place of refuge, shelter, and sanctuary. See, this church became a place of calmness for those displaced families and pets in the midst of the storm. See, this camp is transformed into the place that God intended for this church. Amen? You folks, your friends, and many others mobilized to stand in the gap for others during the storm, all the while praying for God to intercede. Folks, do you know what a dry, warm towel means to somebody entering our church? Just cold, wet, and shivering? They had just waded through deep waters the previous harrowing hours. I have this recurring image of this family as they shared their just unbelievable story of survival. Mom and dad and the 4 kids just holding tightly as they waded through deep waters, just trying to find some higher grounds. And ultimately being rescued and delivered to this church. As I looked upon them, they were huddled together, dry, warm towels wrapped around them. I began to see glimpses of relief. But all the while, they were just sharing gratitude and thanks to God for their safety. I have chills just recounting that to you. One simple towel shared by someone interceding. That's all. See, each of you in your own way answered a call to stand in a gap. You provided support with your unique talents, gifts, skills, and more importantly, your desire. But as promised, God did the rest. See, resources timely and abundantly appeared in our church. One loaf of bread became too many to count. Five volunteers turned into 10. One towel became 7 right before our eyes. See, friends, God only wants us to stand in the gap. In the midst of any storm, He promises He'll do the rest. See, Lloyd answered a call for volunteers. He drove a 15-passenger van. He came to us, said, "I'll do anything I can." We had more displaced families come in here than we had room. And rightfully so, we had some guests that wanted to get to their loved ones on the other side of town. Lloyd said, "I'll take them." He loaded up a large family and their pets and whatever little belongings they had and made his way across town through flooded streets and reached to their families. But God wasn't done with Lloyd yet, because on his way back on FM 1960, there was a lonely lady standing on the side of the road. She had just been rescued from her high waters in her neighborhood. See, Lloyd picked her up because she had no place to go but this church. When we saw her come into our gymnasium, she was just smiling, just full of gratitude for safety, for the hugs and prayers that everybody gave her. See, that day, Lloyd came to stand in the gap. There were 8 people from Tallahassee, Florida, drove all the way across to I-10, hauling their trailers, their boats, and a trailer full of food and supplies. And it couldn't have come at a better time. They came right to our church because we were opening up and ramping up our, not shelter. But God wasn't done with them, because they quickly took their boats and went out and rescued others who perhaps maybe ended up in our church. See, those awesome folks from Florida drove overnight to stand in the gap. My last story. There was two young college-age ladies came to the gymnasium after a call for more volunteers. And if you saw some of the pictures earlier, just a wonderful sight of mountains of supplies and clothes everywhere. They asked how they could help. And I said, "Sure, could use some assistance in sorting and managing through this wonderful chaos of clothing." They both smiled and said to me, "We love sorting and folding clothes. We work at a clothing store." I'm glad you're laughing, because at that moment, I knew God had a sense of humor in the midst of the storm. See, because He brought those two very special ladies for that task, because they too came to stand in the gap. Friends, we're truly blessed to have this home we call Atascocita United Methodist Church. God's purpose for this campus has always been for a place of refuge and sanctuary for all life storms, no matter how big or how small. All He ever asks of us, if we will stand in the gap, He will most assuredly do the rest. I thank you for allowing me to share a little brief message on hope and remembrance. I'd like to close in prayer, please. Lord, have mercy on us. Lift us up when we encounter our own storms. Lead us to respond by standing in the gap in our own unique way for our family, friends, and community. For we know and trust you will do the rest.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Not bad. So according to the program, my name is Neil Connolly. And that right there might come as a shock to some of you. After all, so many of you know me by my full legal name, which is, of course, Christy's husband. Some of you know me by my church nickname, Mackenzie's dad. If you've ever been called a knucklehead, well, then I'm Coach. And for the rest of you here, I'm probably referred to most often as, you know, that guy who's always in the sound booth, but I don't really know what he does. I have the privilege of being asked this morning to tell you about my experience during Hurricane Harvey. Those incredible couple of days and weeks that I'm sure made not just me, but a lot of us think about the flood of the Old Testament. In the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day, all of the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of heaven were open, and rain fell on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. Now look, I'm no theologian. Shocker, right? So I don't know which stories from the Bible that we're supposed to treat as allegory and which we're supposed to take literally, but I can tell you this morning that there were times during Hurricane Harvey when I couldn't have told you what day it was or what time it was or how long it had been. 4 days certainly felt like 40 at times. I'm sure, like a lot of you, the first thing I remember about the flood was watching some of those television news reports that we saw earlier, seeing so many others in harm's way and the rescue efforts, people who were having to be moved from their homes by boats or just pulled from stranded vehicles. While watching the news, I kept thinking to myself, I have to do something. And right about the time that I convinced myself to drive over to the fire station and see if they had needed assistance, I got a text. Now, why on earth would I, of all people, be getting a text in the middle of the storm? So to explain that, I have to tell you a little bit about my experience here at Atascocita United Methodist Church. You see, the text I had received was from Pastor Deborah asking for assistance delivering air mattresses for the local first responders. And the reason it was me getting that text is because of our involvement with Family Promise. Family Promise is a return to sufficiency program where as many as 4 homeless families from our local area are welcomed into our church as part of a week-long rotation. It's an amazing organization run by really incredible people. Not only did my experience with Family Promise provide me with the knowledge of where the air mattresses were stored, but it also allowed me the opportunity to learn about volunteering with the displaced and the traumatized. See, here at AUMC, our ability to serve their guests is made possible by the time and efforts of a group of usually about 80 volunteers for each visit. And my first interaction with so many of you here this morning was through this program. So with the air mattresses delivered, I was back at home, and I still had this nagging sense that I needed to find a way to do more when Pastor Deborah sent out an email. I don't recall the exact wording, but a shelter was being opened and someone needed to unlock the life center and let the experts into the facility. My reply was 2 words: I'll help. All right, so there's at least one teacher here who's dying to point out that I'll is a contraction, and that's actually 3 words, but we'll move on. What you should be asking yourself, the real question is, what am I doing with a key to the church? Somebody should really reevaluate the decision-making process that led to me having that responsibility. See, when my daughter was younger, we were, like a lot of you, involved in the youth group and the youth group activities. And what I did at all of those events was something that fell well within my skill set. I became the self-appointed guru of garbage. I'd take out the trash, and apparently at some point, my superior sanitation management skills caught someone's eye, and that led to an invitation to be a trustee. And that's why I have keys, because the trustees have keys. When my service on the trustee committee ended, I was told to keep the key for the Life Center as I needed it to be able to open the gym for Hooping Fun. Now look, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm still not even 100% sure exactly how Hooping Fun started almost 10 years ago. But I got to keep the key, and that led to me being able to open the Life Center when the call came. So there I was, standing in the Life Center with the building open, waiting for a person who I had never met, but I had gotten a text from telling me that he was on the way. Not long after, Pastor Wesley from Humble First United Methodist Church, imagine that, Methodist pastor named Wesley, arrived and said to me, "What's the plan?" I looked him dead in the eye, and as confidently as I possibly could, I told him I had started making coffee. I'm pretty sure there's an entry in the Book of Discipline that says that the first person who enters any building shall start to make coffee. Wesley informed me that he had almost 24 hours of experience running a shelter. He let me know at that point that there were 50 evacuees who were actually on their way from Lakeside United Methodist Church, where their shelter had been forced to close. What happened in the hours after the shelter opened was an absolute whirlwind. There was a flurry of activity, during which we all showed an incredible ability to come together and work for the common good. It required leadership that was able to quickly create a working organization of teams to deal with all the specific needs, to be able to rapidly communicate plans, to prioritize and delegate responsibilities regarding the provision of supplies, medical care, logistics, and all the while to foster teamwork. I was very fortunate to be able to fill that role, thanks in no small part to the training that I had received from an organization that's been creating leaders for high-stress situations for over 200 years. Some of you may have heard of it, the United States Marine Corps. We were starting to see volunteers, and Wesley offered a lot of input. He said we were going to need dry clothes, towels, and, of course, food. So I had to stop him right there. I know good and well that before you ask this congregation for food, you have to have some sort of containment plan in place. One does not simply ask a Methodist church for food. There needs to be a specific list with quantities expressly stated. Some of you may know that it's an actual fact that there weren't any Methodists present when Jesus fed the 5,000. How do we know this? Because just one Methodist would have brought more than 5 loaves and 2 fishes. So the word went out over Facebook and text messages and emails, and about 7 minutes later, every single horizontal surface in the entire Life Center was completely covered in food. Oops. There were stacks so high that it may have been creating a crushing hazard, and before I knew it, the gym closet had been filled from floor to ceiling, completely full. As we were walking by, Jeanette Stevens dove headfirst through the door into the pile and started sorting all of the different goods as she tunneled into the mountain. You thought I forgot about that, didn't you? When it became apparent that we were going to need beds, I heard Pastor Deborah's voice in the back of my mind gently reminding us,
"We're not a shelter.
We are only a dry way station. We are not a shelter." So the call went out for beds. And the scouts really came through, as well as dozens of you. Although, I do think that some of you may have been taking advantage of the situation to clean out your garages and attics. I know that every time I started to think that I was getting tired, or I was worn out, or I was starting to fade, one of the motivators would zip by. Who were the motivators? What made them the motivators? Well, one of them was this tiny, tiny little woman who spent the entire 3 days with a baby strapped to her body in one of those contraptions. She was working all through this and all the time with another person who constituted roughly 40% of her body mass attached to her, smiling all the time. And then there were the other two who were somehow up here working with another human being inside of their body. I'm no doctor, but they both appeared to be roughly 140 weeks pregnant at the time, somewhere in their 33rd trimester. I'd like to take this opportunity to say how grateful I am that they both decided to wait until after the shelter closed to have their babies. And don't think I wasn't asked many times what exactly we were going to do if one of them went into labor. Based on my years of extensive television watching, what we were going to do was two things. First, we were going to get hot water. And then we were going to get some towels. I have no idea what we were going to do after that. Let's just say that it's very, very hard to feel tired or at the end of your rope when there's people around you who are working under those conditions. So the first morning, or the second morning, or a morning, I was outside and a caravan of trucks and boats pulled into the parking lot. The Cajun Navy had shown up. First guy out of the vehicles explained that they had stopped to spend the night in Louisiana in a Walmart parking lot, and when people, complete strangers, found out that they were on their way here to Houston to help, folks filled their trucks, their boats, their trailers, their vehicles with supplies. They now needed to unload all of those supplies because they didn't have room to conduct their water rescues. There was just too much stuff. So off it went, right into the narthex area in the Life Center. After everything had been brought inside, I was walking from the entry over to the kitchen. And this is a short distance. This is from one side of the room to the other. And I get to the kitchen, and there was Charlotte Riggs. I know, contain your surprise that Charlotte was in the kitchen. Now keep in mind that the entry isn't very far and that I was going to refill on coffee and Pop-Tarts, so I was moving with what's called a sense of urgency. So you can imagine my surprise that as soon as I walked in the door, Charlotte said, "I heard you got us some food." Somehow the grapevine had covered that distance faster than I could walk in a straight line. Now, I kind of thought I finally had a chance to put one over on Charlotte to impress her. So I said as confidently as I could, "Yes, ma'am, we have 1,800 pounds of red beans and rice and all the spices you could ever want." Charlotte gave me one of those sideways glances. A few of you may have seen it before. where she had turned just a little bit, and she raised a finger up near her mouth, and she said, "Billy, get my big pot." She turned because she was going back to work, and she stopped, and then she added, "My brother was in the Navy. I have a recipe." Folks, she could have just dropped the mic right there and walked off the stage. It was all over and done with. I tried to go out of my way to make sure that I thanked everyone who came to volunteer, and I hope that I did. I tried to go out of my way to make sure that we welcomed every one of the guests who came to stay with us, and I hope that I did. Right from the get-go, we tried to have anyone who came to stay with us in the shelter referred to as a guest, and this came directly from our volunteer training conducted with Family Promise. It teaches so much about empathizing and putting yourself in the place of the person in need. No matter how many times we were reminded, we all knew that we were being called on to do something more. Sure, many of us know the passage from Matthew 25:40, which tells us that whatever we do for the least of God's children, we do unto him. But to be honest, I think that we, as a community, we all just wanted to do something. It may have been from guilt, the idea that others were suffering when we weren't, but whatever the motivation, it was the right thing to do. Just wanting to do the right thing, to help, to be selfless, no matter the reason, is what brought Darren Skiro to us. He showed up with a barbecue trailer in tow and said he wanted to cook for our guests, the first responders, for the volunteers. Boy, did he come to the right place. There were so many who worked and prayed, and I wish I could thank each one of you individually this morning. Nancy Shortsleeve personally called every single man, woman, and child on the entire Gulf Coast at some point trying to organize and get us information or assistance. Kenny's just a rock. Perfectly calm no matter what was going on. After a few days, I was back at home and I was telling Christy and McKenzie a story about something that had gone on in the shelter, and I said, "Jason," and they were both, "Ooh. Jason who?" And I was stumped. I was completely stumped. Here I had been working alongside this guy for several days, and I had no idea Jason's last name. All I could come up with was Jason, you know, he's about this tall, he's got dark hair, he wears a Cub shirt. Sorry, dude. For 4 days, we didn't see a single police officer. Not one person from the Red Cross, no one from the County Office of Emergency Management. All we had was each other, and y'all were absolutely awesome. One of those evenings, I was walking back from this building over to the Life Center as we had gotten the first responder settled in for the night in our Not a Shelter. And I was walking back along that path. It was dark, and Eric and Christina Evers were walking behind me. And I said something about how unsure I was that we were prepared. You see, that night, in addition to about 40 first responders showing up and needing a place to stay, we had received 2 patients in an ambulance. I'm going to let that sink in for just a second. In addition to the folks who showed up in an ambulance, we had guests who needed medical care and who needed medications. People who had literally walked out of their homes with nothing but the clothes on their back. There was a team of nurses who had shown up and were absolutely working magic to try and find places where prescriptions could be filled, and then having to call doctors and track down doctors so that they could call prescriptions into the pharmacies. It was all overwhelming, and as I lamented the situation and I voiced my fear that something terrible might happen, Eric said with absolute confidence from behind me in the dark, "God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called." Man, did he hit the nail on the head. See, but what I've come to realize since then is that it wasn't just me that Eric was talking about. You see, I feel like I'm not here just to tell you about my experience during Hurricane Harvey. What I see now in hindsight is that this is really about our experience. God didn't just have a plan for me. As we're told in Jeremiah 29:11, he has a plan for us. When the time came, he called us to feed the hungry. And that's what we do every single week through Saturday's Child. He called us to shelter the homeless. And that's what we do with Family Promise. He called us to clothe the needy. And that's what we do with our partnership through HAM. He called us to provide water. And that's what we do with the Methodist Men's Organization. He called us to comfort a large group of traumatized people who were coming into our church for the very first time and didn't know who anyone was or who anything was. And if that doesn't describe the first morning of Vacation Bible School, then I don't know what does. Friends, he'd been preparing us all along for when we would be needed the most. I've been asked before why I'm a member of this church. And I'll be honest, there have been times over the last few years in particular where I've really questioned my faith. I've questioned why I attended any organized religion. We'll all have those times in our lives where nothing seems to be right. I believe that my relationship with God and my path to salvation is not limited to any building. I feel very confidently that I can worship anywhere. But the reason that I'm a member of this church and a part of this community of faith and this family goes back to something I remember being told many years ago. Someone once said to me that sin is knowing if something is wrong and deciding to do it anyway. And to me, that felt very true. I'm sure there are dozens of different definitions from the Bible or from scholars, but that's the one definition that's always stuck with me. Sin is knowing something is wrong and making the decision to do it anyway. As I grew older and I became more aware of the duality of life and nature and the balance of things, I arrived at the rationalization that if sin was knowing something is wrong and doing it anyway, then the opposite must be knowing that something is right and doing it. That must be the definition of a blessing, something worthy. And that felt right. Being a member here and being involved in our programs and ministries has taught me that I can do infinitely more as a part of this church, as a part of a larger group of like-minded people than I could ever possibly do on my own. To borrow another military term, it's like a spiritual force multiplier. Friends, if you take nothing else with you from what I have to say this morning, then I hope that it's this. If you're here to worship with us on Sunday mornings, we are very glad to have you, whether it's here in person or watching on the live stream or on Facebook or on YouTube. But if the only time that you're here at AUMC is on Sunday morning, then you are absolutely missing out on the best part. See, the best part of AUMC happens on Monday night at Bible study. It happens on Tuesday with the Scouts. The best part happens on Wednesday with the music ministry and GPS Kids and the children's programs and the youth groups. The best part happens on Thursday with the Good Timers. And it happens every single morning when kids walk into the weekday learning center. It happens all throughout the week with the young adults and with the counseling and with the dozens of other programs we have here like Kids Hope. It was all of these programs that made it possible for us to do what we accomplished here in Harvey. When the rain starts to fall and the floodgates of heaven are open and everything seems dark and scary and hopeless, this church will be there. These people will be there. This church will be there to provide a meal or dry clothes or a safe place to stay. And that's why I'm proud to be a member of this faith family. And the best part is that to be a part of any of the ministries that we've talked about today, all you have to do is ask. Don't wait for a call. You'll be better for it, and we'll be better for having you as a part of it. Amen.